So we have Crawford Hollingworth of Behavioural Architects and best blogger for the Marketing Society. And my first question to you is, why are you our best blogger? Why do people want to read you?
Well, that's a good question. Here, we're sitting in the Groucho, being asked that, which is a fabulous place to be. I guess you don't set out to be the best blogger, but I kind of write about things that I'm truly passionate about and things that I think should inform and challenge and change the way people think and behave. And so I tend to write about things that have challenged and made me do things differently, or things that I think like, wow, that's an amazing finding, or, you know, something about the brain that makes you just sit up in the morning. And I think that's going to make everyone else sit up and go, wow, I love that piece of information. So I think that would be my kind of editing. It's things that actually I feel people should know and actually have had an impact and changed the way I think or feel, or sometimes just make me laugh.
And we laugh a lot together, don't we?
We do, which is very important. Yeah.
Which is so important, and I think there's not enough fun in business. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that, actually. I think that, obviously I'm really glad that this is just audio, because obviously I'm getting quite old in the tooth. I do think that some of the craziness that when I grew up in business in the late 80s and made us do things a bit different, you know, I think that... You know, I have a kind of strange memory of when I was at BNP. I'm pretty sure that one of the creative directors shot one of the account men with an air pistol because he didn't like the fact that his idea had been rejected. Now, I know bravery is probably...
Slightly worrying.
Is a, but it makes sometimes people work harder when there's a bit of craziness. And it's like, you know, often we're trying to make people do things differently, whether it's to believe in a kind of wild and crazy idea or a new product. And sometimes that needs a bit of disruption. You know, I mean, it's interesting, actually, James, because disruption makes me think really about habits again. Because do you know that 45% of what you do is habitual? So 45% of everything you do during the day is at a subconscious level you're not really aware of.
Not just me, everyone.
Everybody.
Everyone in the world, 45%.
You're 44.2%. But in general, people are about
45%. I think I'm 44.3%.
Well, we can have a look at that later when we have a look in your neural structure. But to me, just actually thinking about that is quite a bit extraordinary. So if you want to do something differently, you know, you need to think about this massive sort of deep subconscious chains which are making you behave in certain ways. So if you want to break out of those, you have to be incredibly conscious of it. Because, again, just going off on a slight tangent, not a slight tangent, but when habits are really hard to form, and we sort of forget that they're not easy things to do, and to form a habit, I'm going to get a bit funny on you here, you have to use your kind of frontal cortex, which is what Daniel Kahneman would call your system two thinking. And then
I've read his book.
It's kind of cool because then that kind of sinks. You know, what is a cobweb sinks into your subconscious. So if you're sitting on a brave agenda and you want people to change things, you have to realise that it's breaking a chain. It's like a chain that is really strong and people don't think about.
Is that not also, you know, things like daily habits like brushing your teeth?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that we all brush our teeth in the same way.
Yes.
Unless we seriously think about doing it differently, which is kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy. And actually, the interesting thing about we do that, because imagine you drive to work, you never think about how you're going to drive the car, do you, luckily? Because you often drive on autopilot, using all that kind of subconscious thing. The same with teeth as well. The interesting thing about teeth is another, I guess, we talk a little bit about in this booklet, but that we've done together. But it's... Sometimes if you can find something that exists and piggyback it, is a great way of building new behaviour. So I think the way that flossing tends to really work is that people say, when I clean my teeth, I am going to floss. And so they piggyback that behaviour onto their, you know, and therefore it's easier to remember to floss your teeth.
Do you floss your teeth?
I do, actually, yeah. Not enough, though.
I know, I don't do it enough. I got told off by the dentist recently.
They are rather mean like that. Yeah.
Moving on. So, obviously, we're a massive supporter of your last book. Do you want to say something?
Actually, I do. You just made me think about something, about our failure to floss. Well, at this point in time, that James and me are both examining our teeth. We're both showing our teeth to each other.
We've both got lovely teeth.
Yeah. Yes. But it's interesting that you look at what I think is going on in the world that we live in, which is a beautiful world. But I think it's harder and harder sometimes to land new great ideas, new products and services, because I think that people are so saturated, that their kind of mental loads are so kind of, you know, kind of like, oh, I have no space. And it's really interesting. So I think that lots of people are doing incredibly brave things that can sometimes fail because they haven't thought enough about how they fit it into people's lives. And think about that kind of deeper contextual space or holistically about human behaviour. So I think lots of great products and ideas that fail probably shouldn't have failed, but have failed because someone hasn't thought enough about how to build it into essentially a habit, how to build it into people's behaviour.
So give us an example of that.
Gosh, of failed ones.
Mm.
Oh, God, so that's
I love talking about failure, as you know.
Yes.
Because we can learn so much from adversity. Not just because I'm a weirdo that wants to talk about failure.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge for me because I think there are so many things that come and go that I'm finding it hard to actually think of one clearly, and I'm tending to remember things that I think have been slightly more successful. I'm not going to... if I look at it from a slightly different...
Be brave,
I'm going to go to a slightly different angle. And a slightly different angle because I think you are someone who loves new things.
I do.
And
shiny new things.
Shiny new things. She loves shiny new things. And what I think is kind of interesting about it is so do I. And we will see things. It may be apps we've downloaded on our phones. It may be products we've bought to put in our kitchens. It may be...
Our rather large kitchens in Corfers.
that's another euphemism.
Did I mention he had a very large driveway as well? But, you know.
And I've got a feeling that if I went into Jem's bathroom and looked inside her personal cabinet, which I'm sure she has there, I'd find lots of things she bought.
Not a euphemism, by the way.
That she bought... that she's never actually used. And the reason she would have bought them is she would have seen something and go, oh, I love that, but would have got it and then just forgotten about it because the people who'd launched it haven't thought about how to fit into her life. Go downstairs, like in my kitchen, and I suddenly open the cupboard and at the back I find the fruit or the juicer I bought 2 years ago. Or, as Mike was saying earlier, you know, the kind of whatever pineapple Cora that we thought was a great idea. But there's loads of stuff that sit in the kind of graveyard of new ideas. And on our apps, you look at our phone and there's something we thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And that's because it hasn't... Great ideas by people, but they haven't made it a habit. They haven't made it displace something you currently do. And that's what I've kind of tried to do in this book with you guys. I've tried to give 6 really simple strategies where you can actually build new behaviour. You can build brave new agendas into people's lives by changing their behaviour.
Well, that was my next question that you rudely interrupted a minute ago.
No, I'm really sorry about that.
No, it was lovely. I enjoyed talking about tea. But, you know, we have really supported all of the stuff you've done, but particularly, you know, your books on habits, and we're really proud to be part of it. But how is this new one going to help marketers?
So the last one we did together, which I was incredibly proud of, it was a lot of it looking at some of the really interesting behavioural science around how you make, break or measure a habit. And it was bringing some of that latest sort of learning from around the world, because we sort of have begun to, I guess we spent a lot of time studying how behaviour becomes and how you change it. And since that book, which is like 4 years ago, there's been a lot of new learning. And I was particularly drawn to a kind of really cool guy called David Neal from Duke, who did some really interesting new thinking on this. And what I actually thought was there was so much new thinking, we kind of felt that what if we just made a really simple, quite a short book, that actually said booklet, that sort of says, actually, there's 6 things you just need to know in terms of how to build new habits, and to make something incredibly easy to use that anyone could just pick up and it could inspire how they could change behaviour or challenge existing behaviour or build new routines into thinking or new routines into innovation or new routines into creativity. So you could look at it and come out of it in a 15-minute read with a simple, in a sense, roadmap or toolkit to help you to do that.
That sounds brilliant, but as a comms person, marketing person, you're meant to do things in three, because four's too many and two's not enough. So how do you deal with six? Is it because it's two lots of three?
Well, it's very interesting. It's a good question. It's a good question, although there were so many one, twos and threes going on there, I was actually trying to add them all up, and I was thinking I've got to about 12. So what we do is we kind of break it into, it's that thing, isn't it? There's three things you need to know about the old wise woman. One is she's old, one is she's wise, and one is she's a woman.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that?
No, yeah, but I love it. I love it. Am I an old wise woman yet?
I think that'd be, you're a young wise woman. But I think it might have been a Monty Python's actually. But so what we've kind of broken it into is essentially there is one we think is what everybody should try to do, like the most important one you should do, the most important strategy. And in a sense, then we've tried to, and that is, by the way, to ensure, if you can, a stable, supportive environment, because it's so critical, the context in which you try to change behaviour. And then the other five, we've broken into what we think is important, and others which would be great if you can. So in a sense, to help you, James, you can pick the three you like the most.
I like it. Thank you. So you've been a huge part of our Brave agenda. So since I became Chief Exec last January, I handpicked a team of brilliant people to help me feel and be brave and encourage that bravery in others, and you were front of that team. What is it that makes you be brave and that inspires you to be brave, braver?
I love the question, and I love the agenda that you've created, because I think in a weird way, in my own little, insignificant way, bravery has always been incredibly important to me. So, a bit of my history. I've been quite lucky that I've done certain things and they're going very well, and then I've completely decided to walk away from them.
We can go there in podcast part two.
whether it was building another company that was, became part of WPP and then leaving to set up another company. And all I remember is my young, beautiful daughter looking at me and going, when I resigned and got into lots of trouble, looking at me and going, "Are you completely and utterly mad? You had a lovely job, a lovely office, everything was going well. What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm just really interested in this new subject." And she went, mad. And I think that I like you, like shiny new things. I like things that disrupt me. I like things that wake me up. I like things which push possibilities or plausibilities. And when I'm looking for things that I write about, they're things that literally move me forward. I wake up every day. I wake up way too early every day, like 4 a.m., even if I've got to bed at 1 a.m., because I'm full of all the exciting things that will challenge me that next day. And I'm privileged to work with some of the most extraordinary people around the world who are trying to do different things and mix things up.
Are you a morning person then?
Well, my problem, James, is I'm a morning and an evening person.
Oh, wow.
And when they combine, it's just all hell lets loose.
Yeah, see, I'm a complete evening person.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that, because I've never noticed.
So what do you think marketeers, our industry, can do to be a little bit braver? So people always say to me, what does brave mean? Bravery is, the big things like being a soldier or a nurse, and I would say to them, it's not. It's this. Yes, it is that. It's absolutely that. It's all these incredible brave things, but it's the small things you can do every day that take you outside your comfort zone.
Yes.
And part of that starts with being able to be yourself.
Yes.
And be your true self. And actually, a lot of companies say that they're set up to allow people to do that, but the reality is they're not.
Yes.
So as marketeers, we're not just fighting all the different things of our industry and the pace of change and everything that's happening, we're also fighting that piece as well.
Yeah.
So what would you say we can do as an industry, as people, as humans, to be more brave?
I think that if you look at the world from my kind of behavioural science, behavioural economics point of view, I guess in any work situation there are kind of subconscious ley lines which actually make you do things in the same way without you actually knowing, for instance. And I think that...
Worrying.
It's just because of what you do. And everybody sees the world in a particular way through their own rose-coloured spectacles. And even though they don't believe they do. And so we suffer from We suffer from a number of fundamental biases like that, whether it's, you know, confirmation bias, whether it's egocentric bias. And so the more conscious we are of the things that actually make us not ourselves or make us do things in the same way and don't open ourselves up to other possibilities, I think the more powerful and brave we can be in the agenda we can set. I'll tell you, there's, it's not related to habits, but there's something that I know you'll find this really cool, but we wrote a bit in Market Leader and we're doing a longer piece. The Market Society Journal, one of the best journals there is.
Which actually we're just relaunching at the moment. It's going to be even better and you'll be a big contributor of that, won't you?
I hope so. Absolutely. It's one of the ones I very much value in the world. And so we looked at creativity, and we're doing this piece in about 2 months with the Market Society, where I looked at creativity in organisations and think, to be brave, you need to be creative. Mm. You need to, I don't, whatever you want to call creative, but you need to have ideas which are not the ideas you had yesterday. You know, you need to, need to think outside the box. You need to disrupt yourself and whatever. And when you look at how people think in organisations, they tend to do three things which are, which we know from behavioural science work against having great ideas or new ideas or fresh ideas. One is we tend to have it always with people who are a bit like us, because we tend to work with them, so there's no diversity. And diversity, actually diverse opinions, builds great thinking. Number two, we suffer from this ridiculous concept that all ideas are good ideas. In brainstorms, absolutely nonsense. Lots of ideas are terrible ideas. And it's proven again in behavioural science that if you challenge people with ideas, better ideas come out. Because in a sense, people therefore justify and it pushes them further. And just the third one, which I think you're going to love, is what's been proven in terms of getting your brain to work most effectively is you need about 7 to 8 hours sleep a night. And the really interesting thing about this is what it does. So imagine you're trying to come up with some great ideas. You've got an interesting diverse group of people, lots of ideas. You challenge each other. The room is full of great thoughts. The best thing to do is to make everyone go back home and go to sleep. Because if they get about 6 to 7 hours or 7 to 8 hours.
I was going to say, you said 7 to 8. 7 to 8.
7 to 8.
I heard
7
that.
To 8. It is 7 to 8. I won't go into REMs and all that, but your type of... it sounds like I'm going to sing.
And you can't
them.
Use acronyms with me either.
No, because it sounds like I was talking about a band, I might start singing them. But your brain relaxes in such a way.
I love it.
Oh, so I'd love to sing as well, actually. Yeah. Another night. It feels right here in Groucho.
Crawfcast part 3.
That feels right for the Groucho. We'll come back and do it another time. But what happens in your brain is as the brain relaxes, it makes more connections in a really kind of simple way. So actually, you'll become more lateral. So if you're resting with lots of ideas and you have a lot of sleep, you'll wake up and have made more lateral connections. And this is, again, proven by science. And you'll come back the next day with even better ideas. So if you want a really great piece, if you want to have a real bit of disruptive, brave thinking, do something over a number of days. The other really interesting one, if you create pre-tasks, it sets up interesting brain structures that will make you even braver and even more disruptive. Isn't that cool?
It's very cool, but I just want to pick up something you said on point two, where you talked about, you know,
was
there's a lot of new
three
ideas.
Points
that,
in there, was that okay?
Yeah, I liked that you did that. Where you said, you know, there's a lot of new ideas or ideas that are not great. And that's cool, but we have to encourage people to be able to share ideas whether they're good or not. And I think one of the brave things is in a room where there's lots of big voices,
yes.
Being able to be the lone voice, being able to be the voice that feels confident enough to be able to speak out. And I always say to my team, you know, no question is a bad question, no idea is a bad idea, because I just want people to contribute and get involved. Whereas if you create a culture where people think that they're bad ideas, how do you create that participation?
And I think it's, I think you have to work incredibly hard to actually create that kind of culture. It sounds easy to do, but it's like you're trying to unlearn essentially organisational structures. Mm. And so you might achieve it in one meeting, but making it part of the culture is something you have to look at. So I as a client, we were trying to create a culture of kind of creativity, and what we did is We had to raise the profile of, it was all about great ideas rise to the top, but we had to create a profile of people's ideas that did rise to the top, so people could really see that people in this big global organisation, that people were listening to other people.
Right.
And you had to, I mean, it was, there was posters on lifts, there was visualisation of these people, it was made a big thing, and even that was still hard. It's very easy to, if you work in an organisation where you can see there's a management, there's a structure, there's big thinkers, it's so easy just to fall in line. And so you consciously have to challenge and disrupt that and celebrate the little voice. It just reminds me of a boss of mine once, which I think you'll love. Maybe I won't mention her name. Okay, she was M.T. Rainey, who was a very brilliant woman, and is a very brilliant
woman. Taught
me a lot. And M.T. was my boss, and I remember with a client, she'd probably deny this, but with a client she said, culture is very important to me, and in this organisation there is no hierarchy below me at all.
That's what, I can see her saying that. Lovely. So, what's
actually, there's a thing that reminds me about her and you a little bit, because there's a little bit of a story.
You need to clarify
Gems
that
there.
Now.
So there's a thing that I know about Gems, is that her team sometimes know that between meetings that Gems will be somewhere in a car and it's going to be late, and they're all going, when are we going to get the call between the meetings to tell us that she's in a car that's going to be late? And they shared this with me, which I kind of like, is it going to be this? You could always put it on a map. And we used to have a map at Shire Day, which had MT driving to work, and we had to guess where she'd run out of petrol on the way to work.
Oh, wow. I don't drive anywhere.
I like the kind of analogy to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry about that.
I'm slightly concerned about that. No, it's all good. It's all good. I am quite late. I was late today, wasn't I? But only because I was hosting a lovely breakfast with lots of lovely people in the other part of town, and traffic was... bitch, really.
It was.
and I like to talk, I'm not very good with the whole punctual thing. But, I have lots of other skills, so that's the main thing.
You have fabulous skills. You have fabulous skills. And you've really changed the way the Martin Society thinks and works, and, it makes it a very exciting, dynamic place to be in. So,
Thank you. Well, it's part of the team around me. It's a lot to do with that, and both the internal team and the headquarters and the global teams, but also the hand-picked team that brought together to really help elevate the Brave agenda, which I think we're doing.
Yes.
And we've got lots of exciting things coming up, haven't we?
The
Braver conference as well.
And I think that's the kind of point, is that people think that conferences to have one theme and then change. And actually, bringing... I do believe for in the next sort of, 5, 10, 20, 50 years, for us to grow and survive as in the sort of societies we want to, if we're not brave... then it will only be disaster.
We'll be obsolete. Mitch Oliver said that. We were on stage together in Rome, and she said, if we're not brave, we'll be obsolete.
I agree. Or we'll just become sort of people who just do the same thing and have no reward from it. And, actually being brave and doing different things, literally like me, when you wake up in the morning, you've got a spring in your step, a smile on your face, as I go down my long driveway.
You've got to love what you do, though, don't you? I mean,
yeah.
We did an event on Monday night with Syl Salah and the author, Kate Moss, not the model. And she was just brilliant. She's written...
I did a photo shoot, but with the model, not the author.
Oh wow. Window into Croft's world. But with her, she said, you've got to love what you do, and it's when you love what you do, you can be your best self. And I think that's so true. And I always, one of my favourite quotes is Steve Jobs, it's only when you truly love what you do that you'll be exceptional.
Yes.
And I think it's so true, isn't
it? I think it's a beautiful, it's both those thoughts are beautiful. I'll tell you what I think is really, it's very hard because lots of people in lots of jobs, it's hard to love what you do sometimes. And I think what I think at the moment we're learning about, again, back into sort of my world of behavioural science, or behavioural psychology, behavioural economics, whatever you term you want to use, is actually the most beautiful thing is it's about everybody. So what you learn is about human behaviour. And what I found in my company, I think everyone, we won the best place to work, for instance. And I think it's because what we do is teach people about themselves.
Mm.
And I think there's something kind of extraordinary about what we're learning about the human beings, because if we want to talk about marketing, which is great, but actually it's about you. and you know, and how you behave and how you think, and insights into, you know, your relationship or your kids, or
humans.
Yeah, and I was recently I did a really interesting talk where someone said, I've got this really cynical global sales force, and I want them to understand how behavioural science allows you to think and see people in a really different way. And I thought, how can I do this in a brave, non-conventional way, and being slightly controversial? And so I don't know what it was, and I went to sleep. Obviously, I had my 7 or 8 hours, and maybe I had too many glasses of champagne with James and the Groucho. And I went to sleep, and I woke up, and I thought, actually, what I'm going to do is go in and talk to them and say, I'm going to spend the next 45 minutes in telling you how to get more out of your relationship at home. And I talked about all the behavioural concepts that taught them to both understand their partner, but also how to manipulate them.
I love it. That's brilliant. I'm going to be taking some of those tips later. Yeah. So touching on...
I'll give them tips next week.
So touching on being able to be ourselves, Ruby Wax spoke for us last year, and she said something that's struck with me ever since, and actually we've really built it into our agenda. So we talk about it's okay to be yourself, and that's great, but actually Ruby talks about it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And we should be cool with that, and we should be able to be visible about that.
Yeah.
But actually the reality is, again, that's very difficult.
Yes.
So we do this thing where in our team, and our mission as part of our Marketing for Change initiative is, how can we create safe spaces in the workplace and remove the stigma around mental health?
Yeah.
And so we do a thing where everyone personally writes on a post-it note what thing they will do to create that safe space. And one of our team, it struck me hugely, said, I'm going to be honest with my team about the state of my head.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so powerful that, A, he wasn't able to be before.
Yes.
But B, that he was able to be open enough to be able to share that.
Yeah.
And it allowed us to have much bigger conversations and be much more real about stuff.
Yeah.
How do you think we can encourage that?
Well, I think what you're doing is really well. What you're trying to do is build a habit there. So you have to create something which is...
Do you know
is...
about habits, Crawford?
So to create, you've created something which you just have to make sure it happens, or the space happens all the time. Because otherwise it just becomes a kind of one-off and everything. So I think that, by the way, I do think more and more we are encouraged to be able to say how we feel about things. And I think that is growing.
I think
the stigma of whatever you want to call it, and saying, actually, I'm not comfortable with this.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with this, is kind of acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, and I think mainstream media and sitcoms and stuff have really helped with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Brian, what's his second name, Breaking Bad guy at the National.
Oh, I love him.
You know, I'm sick of this, I'm not going to stand it anymore. You know, that kind of play is... Cranston.
Cranston.
You know, and I, together, Gems and me are powerful, we can get names like that.
Together we're better.
And I think things like that are incredibly important to create a context that it's okay. But then what you're doing, you need to create a space where, you know, at that space there's always room for it to happen. So if you like work in the CIA or something, they have they red team things where they have people that always challenge your point of view. So you always have a team that has a, you know, is there to be controversial. And in the same way, creating a space where that's a regular space, not a one-off space, is incredibly important. Actually, it might have a really interesting study about why you need to create environments where behaviour change can take place. And it was one which was I forget what it's called now. It's called something, I'm trying to remember, the Daily Mile, I think it's called.
Mm.
And it was that initiative which was, we know that whatever, 33-34% of kids aged between whatever 3 and 15 are obese. And about, you know, whatever, only 20% of women, girls in that age group, and about 30% of men get the exercise they're meant to. So there's a whole kind of program of how do you kind of do that. And this isn't about safe space, but it's kind of an interest in lateral thought. So that really, it was a really kind of cool school, I think, called, I don't know, I think it was maybe in Stirling. They said every day at the same time, we're going to walk a mile. And every kid would come and walk a mile. You don't have to get into kit, not gym kit, any of that rubbish.
Nice.
You just walk a mile. And actually, the teachers would lay it out and they'd make fun of it and make it enjoyable, and it became a habit. And actually now, 2,500 schools are using that same programme. And the reason it works is it happens at the same time, every day, with everyone, and it's easy, again. So if you want people to, and I love sort of initiatives like that, and again, if you look at the obese rate of that school, I think it's like 48% below the average now.
Brilliant.
But what I think about creating places where people can say, I don't like that, you have to keep encouraging that and keep, back to what I was saying earlier, celebrating it. Because it's, you know, those are, you know, being brave is hard. And it only works if you continually reinforce it.
Lovely. Like we're doing with Brave, Braver, then we'll be bravest.
Yeah. And then we'll have a rave because we'll take the bee off.
We're totally going to have a rave. Thank you so much. I think we've run out of time, but it's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been lovely to talk to you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's so nice to be interviewed over a glass of champagne.
I know, and at the Groucho no less. Yeah. I mean, you know. Look at how we roll. Can we do
memberships? Can we do? Can we do?
Can we do Call for Calling Part 2?
Love to.
Let's do it. Okay. Well, thank you so much. You've totally inspired me, and I know you're going to inspire our listeners.
You inspire me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.